You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach. And one of the most important things, as we've been talking about for a long, long time now, is the importance of engaging the political system on the local level, the state level, on the federal level, to be able to win political power and to be able to get our point of view heard. Because one of the greatest things is when you run as a candidate, the system can't shut you out. No matter how biased the press is, they can't stop us, due to federal election laws, from being able to put our propaganda out there, even though they seem to try a lot. At least on the airwaves, they can't stop us. And there's huge potential to have the message of nationalism, identity, and traditional values be able to reach a whole new audience. So on the phone today, I'm very, very honored, a man that many of you saw when the news hit about a billboard that he put up. But I have Mr. Rick Tyler, who is running for Congress in the great state of Tennessee. The volunteer state looks like, once again, it has volunteered one of its own to be able to fight for nationalism and fight for our people in the public sphere. So first of all, Mr. Tyler, how are you doing today?
I'm doing real well, and I thank you very much for having me on your program.
Oh, well, of course. It's a true honor. So let's start off kind of at the beginning. Tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a longtime activist. I'm 58 years old, and in my early 20s, when I was about 22 years old, I became very vocal and outspoken about various oppressive tactics of certain agencies of the federal government, most specifically the Internal Revenue Service, and I began taking a public position, writing editorials in the local paper, and suddenly I found out that I was going to have to leave the comfort of my corporate job. I was a manager of a department store at the time. And ever since then, I have been freelance, so to speak, and have been involved in various and sundry types of activism, trying to educate a public that unfortunately all too often simply doesn't want to know the truth. They'd rather stay in their comfort zone and their dream world. But certain things that are happening today, I believe, have changed the paradigm in a way that we have an opportunity that in my lifetime, and maybe in many generations, it's rare and unique, and I believe that we've got to seize the moment and take advantage of it.
Well, it's one of those things that, as we've seen, you know, for instance, just last week, we've talked about it extensively on my program and other places around the world. With Brexit, the idea of the British people basically rose up and realized the corruption in Brussels, these foreign bureaucrats, these unelected people, were dictating the lives of normal British citizens. That even when you had lawmakers, it's very similar to what's been established after 1865 in our states. Our states were supposed to be sovereign under the 10th Amendment, to be able to have local politicians that you knew and were connected with our communities to be able to really run the lives of our communities. It was supposed to be local. That was the dream of the anti-federalists, and even the initial federalists, I don't think, could have dreamed how bad our system would get here. But as the British people rose up and rejected this foreign power that had this totalitarian hold on them, was looting them of their money, was dictating their lives, was forcing laws that they didn't want down their throats, and then threatening them for it, the British people said, we don't want that. We want sovereignty. We want nationalism. So here in the United States, I think it's a very similar struggle to what we do in our states, that states need to realize that we don't need to be a part of this empire that doesn't respect us, that loots us, that takes our wealth, destroys our communities, sends our sons off to die in their foreign wars. It's a bad thing on every front. We get nothing out of the system except having to expend our money and our blood for a regime that hates us. So can you tell us a little bit about, to go into what happened with all this controversy? Because Rick Tyler for Congress, that has been plastered all over the internet. I've seen it on left wing, on right wing, on foreign newspapers, everything. So what happened to make this big hullabaloo?
Well, if you look on my website, you can read an article that I posted I believe it's under the title The Billboard Strategy, where I forecasted what indeed came to fruition and what happened. I mentioned to the readers of the website at that time, pre-Billboard, pre-Make America White Again Billboard, that an upcoming billboard was getting ready to be put up that would make a significant splash. And, of course, that was an understatement compared to what has happened. I had already put up another billboard that hadn't garnered much attention up until that point, and that was the I Have a Dream billboard, which also, in the aftermath of the posting of the Make America White Again billboard, the I Have a Dream billboard came under attack, and now they're both mentioned in the same breath as supposedly odious and despicable messages of hate. And, of course, I always say to the people that are raising that charge, what in the world could possibly be hateful about a white man advocating the return to the demographic of the mid-60s? You know, what's hateful about that? And, of course, we know that only in the warped and twisted, truncated minds of the modern, you know, propagandized, brainwashed electorate, or at least the large percentage of that electorate, could anybody misconstrue such a message as being hateful. But there's been a controversy that has erupted, and it has been really phenomenal. There obviously are the Pavlovian dog reacting type people, but there are a great, great many people who are reacting in a favorable way. Of course, the enemy, in their typical fashion, they're using threats and intimidation, and they're using even terroristic threats against the people that are supportive. One of the property owners of the billboard that I had up, actually, he acquiesced to terroristic threats. They were threatening to burn him out. And, of course, this is an aspect and dimension of the story that people need to hear as well, to realize that you understand just how far gone our rights are, our right to free speech, when you do something as controversial as what I have done. And it's really good in that sense, in that it brings it out into the public eye to where nobody in their right mind can deny what's really going on.
Well, exactly. I mean, all because I've read over your website several times and on your policy positions where you talk about getting back to the pre-1960s immigration laws and policies. And of course, something that's often forgotten is Ted Kennedy. I'm not even going to say God rest his soul, because, you know, everything he's done, the blood that's on his hands personally and through his policies, I don't think he's probably in a very good place. But he promised with the Immigration Reform Act of 1965 that it would not fundamentally alter the demographics of America. The American people were lied to in the mid-1960s, saying that we were going to put this new law into effect, and it wasn't going to drastically change the demographics. And here we are, where whites in America are going to be a minority, probably by the time my son, who's going to turn a year old in a few months, by the time he can get a driver's license, he's going to be a minority in a country that right now, 50 years ago, was over 90% white. So the politicians lied. They lied to the American people. They called the people that knew that was going to happen fear mongers and hate mongers and everything like that. And they fundamentally lied, changing the demographics of America to one that doesn't reflect the historical foundation. You know, the founders said that they declared themselves freeborn Englishmen. And the first immigration law passed by George Washington had an ethnic component to ensure that we were going to be a nation for a specific population of Western Europeans, that we were going to have the same culture, the same identity, and that's what holds a nation together, just like a community. That's high trust, you've got a lot of things in common, and you can rely on one another. But now multiculturalism is bringing riots to our streets, disunity, violence against whites, and outright discrimination. I mean, our Supreme Court, just upheld last week racial discrimination against whites at public universities, that even if you're the most qualified person for the job, you can actually be denied scholarships, be denied positions in universities just because you're white. So we're not only facing demographic displacement, but there's outright state-sanctioned discrimination against us. And as you've brought up with a lot of the, using the Confederate battle flag, that's a symbol that we need to be able to have out, because they're trying to tear down all of our monuments. In Louisville, Kentucky, just an hour south of us, where we've got a very active party chapter, they're actually in the process of tearing down the monument. They don't have another place for it, so they might just tear it down and destroy it, just like ISIS is doing in the Middle East to destroy ancient churches and anything that's pre-Islamic. they're destroying, it seems like, our anti-white establishment and the radical liberals want to destroy everything of our culture. So could you talk to us a little bit about, you are a man from Tennessee, a great southern state, one that whenever I've done activism there has been very well received by the public. Can you tell us a little bit about what brought you to use the Confederate battle flag and what it means to you?
Well, certainly. And before doing that, there's a principle in Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence that fraud vitiates the contract. And what you've mentioned about the immigration and reform legislation of the mid-60s is absolutely 100% correct. It was fraudulently presented and, put through on fraudulent pretenses. And therefore, it is not valid. And the results of it obviously have created mayhem and all manner of insidious evil. That's what we're facing today. Also, you mentioned the Brexit, phenomenon. And in my estimation, that's secession. And secession needs to be at the forefront of our conversation, if for no other reason, as a threat to, those who would otherwise perceive that they can continue to usurp the rights and the liberties, of the people of the South. Now, the Confederate flag is so critical. It's so crucial to the conversation as well, because, we realize, those of us who are in the know, we realize how important our history, our heritage, and our heraldry all are. The battle flag, of course, has great symbolic heritage and history, and the enemy, in their typical fashion, they have succeeded in turning it into a false symbol, something that they have fraudulently foisted upon the public to make them think that it is about something that it, in fact, is not about. We know that if we lose that symbolism, if we lose our monuments of our ancestors and the great epic struggles and conflicts that they engaged in, that goes a long way towards being able to completely steal our future as well, because the future is inseparably intertwined with the past. And that's, of course, why they like to flush true history down the memory hole. I have been a tireless advocate of the Confederate flag virtually my whole adult life. I have foreseen what has happened many, many years ago and, have always tried to warn people. And again, in the aftermath of the unfortunate events in South Carolina, we saw a renewed battle against the flag. And I was proud to see in Tennessee many Confederate flags spontaneously popping up, people displaying them in their vehicles and from their homes. And we are certainly in this region that I'm located in, we are one of the hotbeds of, favoritism towards the Confederate flag. At a property that I control in Tennessee, I have flown a Confederate flag consistently there, unbroken time sequence for 10 years, and continue to do so today and brandish the flag in my website and other publications, because if you don't use it, you lose it. Now is the time to be as bold and audacious as we possibly can.
I totally agree, and I had the honor of speaking at a Confederate flag rally last year in Knoxville, and it was great. Within the nationalist movement, we've got so many great dedicated men and women, but one of the things that really encouraged me was the fact that there were so many people that had never been involved as activists before or as nationalists before, and they realized the attack on their heritage. And when I was able to be able to speak to the people who were there, the majority of them were just normal everyday citizens that are talking about the same things that we are talking about: the federal government oppression, or talking about mass immigration and the impact it has, talking about the impact of free trade upon our economies, driving down our wages. And then, of course, with mass immigration, while our wages are already in the dirt, they're bringing people in just to take our jobs, and about the attack on our culture and our heritage, because I think it's very crucial. Our duty is to be able to maintain that flame of identity and tradition that our ancestors fought for. They were literally willing to walk into the guns of the enemy to be able to fight for our future. So we need to be able to honor them and be able to honor their symbols, because the Confederate battle flag is a soldier's flag. It is the flag of our ancestors that, against all odds, stood up against a tyrannical government and were willing to sacrifice everything for the cause of their families and their culture and self-determination. So I think you also hit on a very good point on the fact of secession. needs to be something on the table because, you know, as we mentioned with demographics, we will be a minority in the entire United States, but also increasingly in the South. When you've got major corporations like Tyson and others that bring in huge numbers of Hispanic immigrants, the Obama administration, you know, has had this policy of resettling refugees and immigrants in majority white areas in places like the South, places like the West in Montana and Idaho, of other places where there's very strong anti-federal government sentiment because people realize what the federal government does to them. It shuts down their ability to mine, to be able to control their own affairs. So it almost seems like they're trying to push us out demographically to make these areas easier to control. I would just, you know, not to jump too far into a conspiracy, but when the Obama administration and the Housing and Urban Development Bureau is saying that that areas that are not diverse need to be diversified. So they're purposely moving people into historically white communities, bringing in people that are of a foreign culture, a foreign ethnicity, who have nothing in common, as we saw in this tragic rape of a 5-year-old girl by the Children of Refugees in Idaho. There's no oversight in who we're bringing in, and there's real, you know, crimes that are happening, and there's blood on the hands of these politicians. So what can you tell us a little bit about what you see as kind of the Obama administration, but also the Republicans? Because I see you're running as an independent, which I would assume would be kind of a rejection of the corrupt two-party system. Because even as we've seen with Donald Trump, the GOP, because of his talk about immigration and free trade, is trying to sabotage him in every way they can. Because the Republican Party does the same job that the Democrats do of attacking us, attacking our sovereignty, and favoring Wall Street over Main Street. So could you give us a little perspective as to why you picked to be an independent and kind of what you see as the two political parties and their policies and how it impacts everyday people in the South?
Well, you remember Jesse Ventura. Of course, he was Reform Party, but he became governor of Minnesota because he was able to make it a 3-man race, and he won on 37% of the vote. Now, I'm an independent. I am on the ballot for the general election. I don't have to compete in a primary against this strong Republican incumbent who is in a safe Republican district. By being on the ballot in November, this forces the incumbent to the recognition and realization that this guy is going to be there. He could potentially garner enough votes to conceivably win the election. This district that I'm in, it is not strong from the Democratic Party standpoint. Typically, the Democrats are going to get, you know, somewhere around 30% in this district. So what I'm able to do uniquely, especially since I have through the events of the last week, I have been able to, in one fell swoop, overcome the hurdle of not having name recognition. Now I have name recognition. And I am now able to do something that has not been done, certainly in the history of the politics right where I am, but maybe even you'd be hard-pressed to find an example of this anywhere, somebody, making front and center a position that is so, you know, controversial, let's say. So I'm able to run to the right, significantly to the right, of this Republican establishment hack, basically, who's in his third term right now. He's a lawyer, and he has a certain amount of baggage in terms of having gone along, with certain votes, the last $1.1 trillion spending bill, 2,400 pages, nobody including him even read it who voted for it. And in that legislation was the money allocated to bring in the 100,000 Syrians, and 1,200 of them have been brought into Nashville, Tennessee, just 3 hours away. So by running as an independent, Tennessee is one of the easiest states in the nation to get on the ballot in a federal election. All that is required is 25 signatures of registered voters in the district that you're running in, which that was very easy for me to get. I'm on the ballot. It's guaranteed. And so I'm able to run hard charging from here on out until the election. And having overcome the obstacle of lack of name recognition, now I can parlay the notoriety that the I Have a Dream and the Make America White Again billboards have generated. I can parlay that notoriety into more and more and more publicity. As we've seen with the Trump phenomenon, Donald Trump has received untold millions of dollars worth of exposure and publicity. And I myself have even been on the receiving end of, if I had had to purchase it out of pocket, would have cost millions of dollars to get the type of name recognition that I've gotten in the last week. And so now, again, the challenge is to stoke the fire and to continue keeping that notoriety alive, which I have held a press conference this past Monday at the roadside location where the billboard was unlawfully taken down and stolen. And I held a press conference and announced, among other things, that I would be, within a couple of weeks, I would be hitting the road with a Rick Tyler for Congress, Make America White Again, I Have a Dream tour bus. And this bus is going, it's a 27-passenger shuttle bus that's going to have a billboard on each side, 8 feet by 16 feet billboards, one of them to Make America White Again, the other one, the I Have a Dream, which features the Confederate flags flying from the White House with I Have a Dream written across the top. And this rolling double billboard that's also going to have a platform on the top that I will be able to climb up on with a bullhorn and address crowds of people. This is going to be, I know political tour buses aren't a novel idea, but I guarantee you the nation has never seen one like they're going to see. And I'm going to tour the 3rd District. And everywhere I go, this bus is inevitably going to be a lightning rod for attention, for controversy. Obviously, the detractors, you know, will probably begin to organize and show up in force against it. And all that does is just continue to keep the story on the front burner. And so, you know, this is very exciting. I do have a lot of interest and people who are expressing willingness to get involved. But needless to say, fear and intimidation are two of the major tactics that the enemies of truth use, and they use it very skillfully and effectively. So anybody who wants to help and support in any way, we welcome that support at this time so that we can make this thing happen. And there is actually a possibility that I could win this office. I could win with as little as 34% of the vote. I posted an article on my website a few days ago called 34 in 16, could Rick Tyler actually win? And in there I lay out the methodology and the possible strategy and procedure and evolution of events through which I could actually emerge victorious in this election.
Well, and it's the sort of thing that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when I've ever done activism in Tennessee, it's been absolutely amazing. Things when you have Confederate flags, when you have, you know, we had White Pride Worldwide flags and things like that. And people were stopping. We were doing an overpass demonstration, is probably the clearest one I can think of. And people were stopping. We were causing a traffic incident because so many people were stopping and getting out and shaking our hands and taking pictures with us. And, you know, truckers, I think we probably got in the span of an hour thousands of honks and thumbs up and things like that. So as I've seen, the people of Tennessee have always been one that understand that the federal government is not their friend, and that political correctness and mass immigration and free trade, all these things are hurting them. They reject these things. So if there's an area to be able to, as the nationalist movement is growing in Europe, it's growing around the world, and it's growing here in the United States, I really think one of the biggest tests we need to be able to have is to be able to run successful campaigns, because that is victory. If only to be able to get the number to be able to knock out the incumbent. I mean, a victory would be absolutely amazing. But even being able to get knock out an incumbent politician who's a party hack, who actively works against the best interests of the people of his district, that will send a shot across the bow to the Republicans to realize, as you mentioned about you running to the right, that their positions will have to shift more towards nationalism, away from their internationalism, away from their wars, away from their unfunded, and just absolutely, I see actually you mentioned the Federal Reserve on your party platform, to move away from these positions that hurt the people of the 3rd District and the South and all of America, if they're going to win, because if we can run nationalist candidates to cause them to lose, even just getting a few percentage points of the vote, then they're going to have to make a decision. They can either come to our side or they're going to lose their elections. So it's an absolutely great strategy. It's one I've talked about now for years, but it's great to be able to see it being practiced in an area that's very friendly to our worldview, and there could be a huge chance of success. So, you know, one last thing, I wanted to go over a policy position, and then I want to go into how people can help. But tell us a little bit about, because the Federal Reserve is absolutely one of the worst things to ever happen to the American public. It took our ability to be able to have control of our own economy. It put globalist bankers in charge of our economy and stealing our wealth. As I'm sure you know, every dollar that's printed is something that we then owe to bankers because it's not printed by the U.S. federal government. It's printed by a private bank that isn't controlled. There is no oversight, and they've been running our economy into the ground now for 103 years. So could you talk a little bit about the Federal Reserve and how that also impacts, because I think normal working families in Tennessee who have been impacted and affected by the economic recession, they're realizing there's less money in their pockets, they're living paycheck to paycheck. One of the reasons they're living paycheck to paycheck is because their money isn't worth anything, because their money's has been looted and diluted in its value and things like that. So can you talk a little bit about how the Federal Reserve and bringing this message to normal, everyday working families, how this will make you distinct with your positions from the Republicans and the Democrats?
Well, absolutely. And remember, it was another great Tennessean, Andrew Jackson, who drove the private bankers out of America. A very narrow vote, was won to terminate the charter of the private bank. And Andrew Jackson was famous for his saying that we're going to rout you vipers out, by God. And, of course, it took them a good while to make a comeback, unfortunately, in 1913 at Jekyll Island. And surreptitiously in the legislature, they were able to once again gain the upper hand and get their insidious private bank back in operation. And we know that then they gerrymandered things to precipitate and bring about the great crash of 29. And the rest, of course, has been just downhill right up to this present moment. And many, many people, though, when I first began telling people in the early 80s, when a first-term congressman from Texas began telling people about the private Federal Reserve, and I picked up on that, being back at that time a strong Ron Paul supporter, even in his first term in Congress, when he started telling people about that, it was hard for people to conceptualize that the Federal Reserve was not part of the federal government. But now, it's interesting how many people that I talk to, and when I tell them that, they nod their head like, tell me something I don't already know. So Ron Paul succeeded in alerting many people to the realities of the Fed, not in fact being part of the federal government, but instead being no more federal than Federal Express, being a private entity. And you're absolutely right. The lives of Tennesseans and Americans are grievously impacted in a negative sense by these secretive, unaccountable policies of this entity called the Federal Reserve. Never been audited, never paid one dime of tax since its inception in 1913. Conservative estimates that it has profited over $50 trillion in that time period. It's time, obviously, not to just to audit the Fed, but to abolish the Fed. Possibly auditing the Fed might be a necessary step towards its abolition. Constitutional money needs to be restored. And, of course, just on the basis of its lack of constitutionality alone, the Federal Reserve should be abolished and it should be obliterated.
Well, excellent. I've got to say, Mr. Tyler, seeing a politician that's running that is not afraid of political correctness, that is standing up for the fact that whites have a voice, we're being displaced, we need to stand up for ourselves, we need to retake our money from these globalist bankers, we need to protect the unborn, protect our gun rights, be able to retake sovereignty for our states, and the government will not listen to us. We need to be able to, like the Brits, be able to have self-determination, is truly inspiring. It goes to show how things are going. So thank you so much. We're coming to the end of our show. Can you give us just a little final thought on how folks can get in touch with you to support you and what your website is?
Sure. The website is ricktylerforcongress.com. That's ricktylerforcongress.com. And if anybody wants to correspond or communicate with me by traditional mail, my mailing address is 1224 1224 Highway 64. And that's in Ocoee, O-C-O-E-E, Ocoee, Tennessee. The zip code is 37361. And the website, of course, affords people the opportunity to be on our email subscriber list. And, of course, we try to post things regularly on the email. I do a regular radio spot on a radio station out of Cleveland, Tennessee right now. Airs 15 times a day, 1 minute long. It's called An Intelligent Conversation About Race. and it's posted and archived on the website as well. So again, we welcome anybody who wants to pitch in and help, and if you want to come pay us a visit and get a crash course in street activism, we welcome your participation as well.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Tyler, and I can say we've got a lot of traditionalist Worker Party comrades that share almost overwhelmingly all of your positions that I think are going to be, I'm going to throw them into the fray to be able to help you, because this is a great example of how we can use politics to bring our message to the forefront and to be able to fight for our people. So thank you so much. Again, Rick Tyler for Congress at ricktylerforcongress.com. If you're in Tennessee's 3rd District or anywhere, let's support this man. Let's get it out there. So thank you so much, Mr. Tyler, for joining me today, and thank you to my listeners. I'll look forward to being here tomorrow, and if you can, let's support Mr. Tyler, and let's make America white again. So I'll look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. Hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heibach at RadioArea.com.